Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. It's hot today, tonight. It's 12:30 at night and it's still about 25 degrees outside. Definitely becoming a summer, an Australian summer. Today we're talking about part 3, chapter 24. So now Levin is getting over farm life. I Am Norwegian says, yeah, Levin turning away from agriculture like that seemed sudden. I guess that means no more working on the farm chapters. But I am happy to be back with Levin. Hopefully he manages to get the balls to pay Dolly and Kitty a visit. I understand that feeling of, oh no, suddenly this situation is a weird and unnatural pretext no matter how I go about it. But that's one of those you just barrel through. And where things return to natural before you know it. Which I know because I used to slither away from uncomfortable social situations much in the same way. JMama8779 says, I don't think he's over farm life. He wants to live more like the peasants working off the land while being more their equal rather than their master. He notes some animosity in their relationship between himself and his... He notes some animosity in this relationship between himself and his workers. However, is it this that's really bothering him, or is it more to do with the inner turmoil caused by the Kitty problem? End of chapter. Oh, for fuck's sake, bud, go see her. You have another shot. Simply Productive says, I was showing my mum this subreddit and she burst into laughter at your last sentence. Lol, thanks for the fun addition. Simply Productive says, oh man, this is going to change everything. ... That's a lot of punctuation you've put. Is it going to change everything? I think I missed something. Why? Because of his whole farm thing. I mean, is he getting over the farm or is he just grumbling about it? Did I get that wrong? Anyway, doesn't matter. Let's read on. I'm going to open this blind here a little bit and get a little bit of that night air. Come on, blind open. Ah, God. I can't reach it. Chapter 25 goes like this. There was no railway or stagecoach to the Surovsky district, and Levin went in his own tarantus. Halfway, he stopped to feed his horses at a well-to-do peasant's house. The bald-headed, fresh-faced old man with a red beard, which was growing grey around the cheeks, opened the gates and pressed close to the post to let the three-horse vehicle enter. After showing the coachman to a place in a lean-to in a large, clean, tidy, newly constructed yard where stood some charred wooden ploughs, the old man invited Levin to enter the house. A cleanly dressed young woman with galoshes on her stockingless feet was washing the floor in the passage. The dog that followed Levin frightened her, but when she was told that it would not hurt her, she at once began to laugh at her own alarm. After pointing to the door with her bare arm, she again stooped, hiding her handsome face, and went on scrubbing. "Want a samovar?" she asked. "Yes, please." The room Levin entered was a large one with a tiled stove and a partition. Under the shelf with the icons stood a table decorated with a painted pattern, a bench, and two chairs. By the door stood a little cupboard with crockery. The shutters were closed and there were not many flies in the room, which was so clean that Levin took care to keep Laska, who had been bathing in the puddles on the way, from trampling on the floor, telling her to lie down in a corner by the door. Having looked around the room, he went out into the backyard. The good-looking woman in galoshes with two empty pails swinging from a wooden yoke ran down before him to fetch water from the well. "Look alive," the old man called merrily after her. and approached Levin. "Is it to Nicholas Ivanich Sviashki you are going, sir?" "He too stops at our place," he began garrulously, leaning on the banisters of the porch. In the midst of his conversation about his acquaintanceship with Sviatsky, the gates creaked again, and the labourers returning from the fields came into the yard with their ploughs and harrows. The horses harnessed to the ploughs and harrows were big and well fed. The labourers evidently belonged to the household. Two young fellows wore print shirts and peaked caps. Two others were hired men and wore homespun shirts. One of these was old and the other young. The old master of the house left the porch and went to unharness the horse. "What have they been ploughing?" asked Levin. "Between the potatoes. We too rent a little land. Don't let the gelding out, Fedov. Lead him to the trough. We'll harness another." "I say, father, have those ploughshares I ordered been brought?" asked a tall, robust young fellow, evidently the old man's son. "They're in the passage," answered the old man, winding the reins into a ring and throwing them on the ground. "Fix them in before we finish dinner." The good-looking woman returned, her shoulders pressed down by the weight of the full pails, and went into the house. Other women, young and handsome, middle-aged, old and plain, some with children, others without, appeared from somewhere. The chimney of the samovar began to hum. The labourers and the family, having attended to the horses, went in to dinner. Levin took his provisions out of the tarantass and invited the old man to have tea with him. "Why, I don't know. We have had tea once today," said he, evidently pleased to accept the invitation. "Well, just for company." Over their tea, Levin heard the whole history of the old man's farm. 10 years previously he had rented about 400 acres from the landowner, and the year before he had bought them outright and rented another 900 from a neighbouring proprietor. A small part of the land, the worst, he let, and with the aid of his family and two hired men cultivated about 120 acres. The old man complained that his affairs were in a bad way, but Levin knew that he only did so for proprietary's sake and that in reality his farm was flourishing. Had his affairs been in a bad way, he would not have bought land at 35 rubles an acre, would not have married three of his sons and a nephew, and would not have twice rebuilt his homestead after fires, nor rebuilt it better each time. In spite of the old peasant's grumbling, one could see that he was justly proud of his property, of his sons, his nephew, his daughters-in-law, his horses, his cows, and especially of the fact that his whole household and farm held together. From their conversation, Levin gathered that he was not against new methods either. He had planted many potatoes which had already flowered and were forming fruit, as Levin had noticed when passing the fields on the way, while Levin's own potatoes were just beginning to flower. He ploughed the land for the potatoes with an English plough, which he had borrowed from a landowner. He also sowed wheat. Levin was struck especially by one little detail. The old peasant used the thinnings of the rye as fodder for the horses. Many a time when Levin had seen this valuable food wasted, he had wanted to have it gathered up, but had found this impossible. On this peasant's field, this was being done, and he could not find words enough to praise this fodder. What is there for the young woman to do? They carry the heaps out onto the road, and a cart comes and fetches them. There now, we landlords don't get on well because of the labourers, said Levin, handing him a tumbler of tea. Thank you, said the old man as he took the tea, but he refused sugar, pointing to a bit he still had left. Footnote says Russian peasants, for the sake of economy, seldom put sugar to dissolve in their tea, but take a lump and nibble it between their drinks of tea. How can one rely on work with hired labourers, he said. It is ruination. Take Sviatsky now. We know what sort of soil his is, black as poppy seed, but he cannot boast of his harvest either. It's want of attention. And yet you too use hired labour on your farm? Ours is peasant's business. We look after everything ourselves. If a labourer is no good, let him go. We can manage for ourselves. Father, Finnegan wants some tar fetched, said the woman with the galoshes coming in. "That's how it is, sir," said the old man, rising, and after crossing himself several times, he thanked Levin and went out. When Levin went into the back room to call his coachman, he found the whole peasant family at dinner, the women served, standing. The vigorous young son, with his mouth full of buckwheat porridge, was saying something funny, and everybody laughed heartily. The woman with the galoshes laughed more merrily than anyone as she refilled the bowl with cabbage soup. The handsome face of this woman with the galoshes might very well have had something to do with the impression of welfare that this peasant household produced on Levin. That impression was anyhow so strong that he never lost it. And all the rest of the way to Sviatsky's, he every now and then recalled that household, as if the impression it had left on him demanded special attention. There we go, another chapter down. Levin really loves his peasants, doesn't he? He's just a real peasant lover. Have your say about this chapter over on the subreddit. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.